Welcome to True House Stories. I'm Lenny Fontana coming out of New York City. And this week, we take our camera vision and go across the pond, a stone's throw away from New York, to a place that I call a second home, London. Very important part to dance music community, London. It's a London thing. And this London thing that I'm going to talk about right now is something that was born and created in the UK, in England, in London, and then went across the world. UKG. UK garage. Not garage. Garage. Okay? With some real OGs. This OG that I'm going to bring up has done tons of charity work, you know, as a senior for youth groups, helped formulate with another great man, Norris the Boss Windroff, the UKG Awards, and became the godfathers of House and Garage, and so on and so on. And he goes back to the late 80s and into the 90s and beyond. I'd like to welcome to True House Stories, a true OG and a leader from the old school and the new school with a lyrical mic, MC Creed. What's up, my brother?
Hello, my friend. How are you, Lenny?
Right away, just the voice alone. Let me say this. Sounds like a very important moment when you say, how am I doing? I am doing the best I can these days with everything going on. Thank you for asking. And what's interesting about it is when you hear just your talking voice, not you doing the rapping and the lyrical, you know, selecting as part of the nightclub event or a big festival, but you can hear the dominance and pressure that it brings. It's incredible. Thank you for coming to the show, and thank you for being part of True House Stories.
An absolute pleasure, my friend. Thank you for that intro. The intro was fantastic. Thank you very much.
I'm glad. I'm happy to do it. I can do it. If you want me to come and open up for you, I'm available anytime. Anyway, enough about me. Since you're an OG of the UKG, because, you know, there's something to be said about the UK garage sound, I should say, being bred off of the American sound that came from New York, New Jersey, Chicago. Yeah. It was a big thing for a lot of you guys in the beginning. You were playing the Masters at Work records.
Strictly Rhythm. Strictly Rhythm was the label, bruv. That was the label.
What label? Say it again.
Strictly Rhythm. That was the label, bruv.
It was all about that, right?
Yeah. So we kind of started off playing a lot of Strictly Rhythm tracks because it was the US house vibe that we loved. This was like in the early 90s. We're talking about 91, 92, them type of years there. And then people like Grant Nelson, you know, he started Nice and Ripe, and he started to make music of a similar ilk. Like, he was kind of reproducing the US sound. And then from there were other people that came over from the jungle scene, because the jungle scene was massive. And then the jungle scene, it got a bit grimy. And as a result of that, a lot of people left that scene and came over to garage, and they brought bass lines and stuff.
Right.
Yeah. And all of that was added to that was added, because the thing is, we were just hungry for music, and that was like another taste to add on to it. So, mate, the result of that turned out to be UK Garage.
Let me say this, though. I got to give some credit to another fella that came out of this Jewish kid out of New Jersey called Todd Edwards.
Yes,
bro. Rocked those bass lines, and he took vocals and made them go,
yeah.
People were like, They were doing that dance. I remember seeing it all in the early days of the
house. That's it. You cannot, yeah, this is the thing. You can't mention UK Garage without bringing Todd Edwards into it. Like, I first heard Todd when another legend from Tough Jam, when Carl Tough Enough Brown used to do his sets, because at the time he was like, you know, the number one DJ, and Carl fully promoted him. So like, yeah, that was it. Todd Edwards was like part of our playlist.
Or should we say landscape, right? The landscape.
Landscape. Yeah, that's it, mate.
All right. We need to hear the OG story from how it begins, the young kid. We want to hear it from tippy-tippy mid-level to your tall boy. So how does music find you as, you know, teenager, young kid, and take us on that journey, because no one paints it better than yourself, my brother. Go ahead.
Okay. So I come from Jamaican descent. So in my household, when I was growing up, there was always reggae and soul, and that type of music was always being played in the house. So I kind of grew up listening to Motown and stuff, and also James Brown and the Rare Grooves, and like a lot of like reggae artists who were playing the conscious reggae. So that was that, like the conscious side of things was always what I was feeling the most, more than, you know, the aggressive grimy stuff. So then, you know, when I started going out myself, like I was going to blues parties at first, because we couldn't really get into the big club. So a blues party is just like a party that somebody would set up in their house, and you could have like hundreds of people going in there, people, and like they would sell drink in there and stuff. People smoked, people danced and partied the night along, but they were like they were normally in like residential areas and stuff, and you know, the police had come sometimes and shut it down. But that was kind of the start for me, where, you know, going to parties, me and my friends. So we might go like 20 of us to like another area where like a blues party was going on. But after a while, I was getting kind of bored of that, because it was kind of like people are just drinking and smoking and getting tired and then wanting to crash out. So it wasn't really that exciting for me going into it. And then in about 1988, I think it was, a friend of mine took me to like an acid house rave. And in them days, you could not hear house music anywhere in the UK. Like, you just couldn't go anywhere and hear it. The clubs didn't cater for it or anything, but I didn't even know it. So when I went to this acid house rave, the music was just new and fresh. It was people like Little Louis with French Kiss. Yeah, I heard that at a rave, like where was that? That was Energy, a big rave called Energy, where there's about 15,000 people there in 89. And when I heard that track, I was just hooked on it. Like, when I heard all the music the night, because it was just completely different from what I was on. So yeah, I just started going out like as many times a week as I could. I'd go out on a Thursday, get home on a Tuesday. Yeah, don't get me wrong, we'd go to people's houses in between, but we were mainly just like following anywhere that you could hear this music. So I was hooked on that. And then I went away, I think it was in about 1989, and I went to Canada, because my dad lived there, and I was there for about 10 months, I think, like 10 months to a year, because I had to go there. And then when I, and the thing is, I was bored, so I was watching Yo MTV Raps. I remember it now, yeah. Like, I don't know, I was watching this Yo MTV Raps thing, and then because I was bored over there, I started writing raps, yeah. And I'd never, I mean, I'd always been musical, but it was more listening to music and like dancing, partying. But I'd always been good at writing, but not in this way. So I started putting my pen to paper. And by the time I left there, by the time I left Canada, I had like a bag full of lyrics. So I came back and I was going to a few clubs. A few clubs had opened up in the UK. They banned acid ass raves. And so the raves went into clubs. So, but when it went into clubs, it was, sorry, when it was in the acid house tents, you could hear all different types of music in one tent throughout the night. But what happened, it, all of this music went into clubs and then it split up, and it split up into, like, I would call it a jungle and hardcore, and then there was like the soulful garagey type music. It was like the techno. So to me, that was kind of the beginning of all of them genres in the UK. And I went back to London because I was there, and I met a guy called Lenny D, and he gave me a go on the mic, because we were in Ministry of Sound. Throughout the night, I was kind of rapping in his ears because I had all these raps in my head that I'd written in Canada. And he went, "Bruv, I'm doing a rave. Why don't you come down here and do that on the mic?" So I went, "Oh, okay." So I did it, and it went well. And then I got another chance to MC at the legendary Labyrinth. I did that, did a couple of PAs there. And then some guys were from Essex were doing a rave at St. Martin's Lane called Wildlife. And Norris the Boss was booked there. Dominic Spreadlove was booked there. Alex P was booked there, all these guys. So that's kind of when I first met them, in about 91. Yeah. So like all of us are working on set. And at the same time, there were other people who were putting on raves that were playing some of the music, but not quite what we loved. You know, a few of us started promoting our own raves. Norris, he was doing, is it Yum Yums, I think. Dominic started Spread Love with Swallow, with Andy Swallow. Genesis Wayne was involved. Like, there was a lot of stuff going on in our circle, and our circle just got like a little bit bigger. And in that circle, there were promoters, there were DJs, there were ravers, but all of us, we used to party every week. And, you know, as I said, we'd go out on a Thursday, I'd get home on a Tuesday, some people got home on a Monday, whatever. But the thing is, we'd be going from houses to clubs to wine bars, pubs to houses to clubs, and like we'd be going on for days.
Okay. And, I got a couple of questions. Couple of questions I need to ask. Lenny D, is that the Lenny D from America, from New York, or is that
no? No, this is another Lenny D. He used to do parties called Lenny Unit 4, right? And he had these parties kind of in London back at that time. So he put me on. He was doing a rave in the Brain in Ward Wardour Street. So basically he put me on there, and you know, that gave me a little bit of confidence. Me and a friend came up with a name for me, like, because my first name is like begins with C and my last name is Reed, so it's like Creed Bosch. So yeah, that all worked. And then basically this other rave, Wildlife, that I started working at in about 92, I think it was, Wildlife became really big. And from there, Dominic's Spread Love, like that rave became really big. The whole scene just kind of opened up. Like, it was just the right music at the right time. We had a lot of great producers who were making tracks, people like Face, Norris the Boss, Tough Jam, Grant Nelson, all these guys. Loads of labels were popping up as well.
And of course, George Power was behind Grant Nelson with Nice and Ripe.
Yeah, that's it.
So hang on, wait. Let me get the next part of it. Yeah, this is now going to lock into how you become MC Creed.
Okay.
Canada. Pre to Canada, you went to Energy Rave. Was that the one that was Paul Trouble and them playing at? That big outdoor rave?
Oh, sorry. Energy, Paul Trouble Anderson. Yeah, of course. Back in them days.
I remember that.
Yeah. Energy was like a big, massive rave. There was Energy and it was like Sunrise.
Okay. Hang on. Next question. When you were there and you're hearing French Kiss and all these house records, was there anyone yet doing any kind of rapping or anything on the microphones?
Okay. Well, look, that scene that we're talking about then, that was the acid house scene. Yeah. The acid house scene. And at the time there was people like Chalky White was on the mic. I think it was, who else was there? Moose, MC Moose, who's like a big jungle MC. He was about them days, but it wasn't really about MCs, the acid house scene. It wasn't about MCs. There were more hosts. I would say a host who just kind of, you know, who's known by everybody and like he just hosts, he just says a few words. But me going to them acid raves, I cannot remember really somebody on the mic standing out to me. It was more about, you know, the music. We didn't even see the DJ because you could just hear the music. The DJ being seen wasn't even important. People went here to listen to the music. So I think there and then it just wasn't like the right time. But the thing is, the spin-off from that, which was the jungle kind of happy hardcore thing, or not even the happy hardcore, but I would say the jungle and the hardcore thing, yeah, a few people picked up the mic then. There was people like Timmy Hardcore. There were loads of jungle MCs, loads, yeah, because jungle was the route. If you wanted to be an MC back in them days, jungle was the route, because it was like the reggae side of house, yeah. And the thing is, there's always like an MC and a DJ in reggae. So
okay, now the next part of this is, now that you're experiencing all this and you go to Canada, you're watching your MTV Raps, if I remember correctly. That was Ed Lover and Dr. Dre used to do that show each and every week, and they would the hottest tracks of the time and rate them and tell you what was going on in the streets. Am I correct?
That's it, brother. Okay. Yeah.
So is it that moment you're watching this, you're saying, I can do this, I can rap? Is that what you were going for? Come on, you gotta get us there. We're like,
okay. The thing is, I didn't even think that I could rap. I just thought that I could write. Hey, right?
What do you mean you couldn't rap?
I thought I could write because I remember once in school, I wrote a song in school when I was about 13, one song my whole life, and that was it. And it was just a cheesy little pop soul song. And basically I wrote that and that was it. I put that to bed. But then years after, when I was watching this rap thing, I was really enamored with the rap, with hip hop and everything, because it was just beautiful and great and fresh and nice. So yeah, so like I was kind of loving that, and something just told me to start writing, and I started writing raps. Yeah, and my raps were kind of like poetry type thing. It was because, yeah, at the end of the day, I would never class myself as a rapper, but at the end of the day, I could always write an essay, or write like something like for an occasion. I could always write something. So I put my mind to writing, and I came up with a few raps. And my brother said, "That sounds all right. That actually sounds all right." So like, I just thought, all right. And that probably gave me the confidence to write more. And then, you know, by the time I came home, I had like a bag full of rhymes in my head. But that's it. That's all I had. Just some rhymes in my head.
So now that you have the jungle thing going on in your mind, part of what you've been seeing in the late 80s with the big open air raves, and now the club scene is starting to shape up where those big festival, well, I shouldn't say festival because that wasn't yet the sound yet, but more or less the raving, more the raving's becoming more consolidated. And you guys, like you said in the beginning, were playing Strictly Rhythm, Nervous Records, Smack Productions, because they were, you know, Mike Cameron and those guys were doing all those records.
And yeah, of course,
big boy, yeah. Right. So you're hearing they're playing it, and if I remember correctly, they were speeding up the records too. Am I right?
Okay. That was like a little bit later, because like my genesis was kind of before that. My genesis was like a lot before that. When we started, kind of the person that I remember speeding up the records, I remember we were doing Spread Love at the Gas Club, and I think it weren't Todd Terry, was it? It might have been Todd Terry. Must have come into the Gas Club and he's said to Dominic, "Oi, this garage, it's like speedy. It's like speeded up. It's like," so he said, "it's like a speeded up garage." So that kind of word came out then, speeded up garage. And it was, and Hermit was the DJ on that promotion who was really speeding up the music that I saw. Like he was, I don't know if he was the first one, but he was like one of the first people who played it a bit faster, because in the UK, our rhythm is a little bit faster than say the Americans, because of the music because that's just how we do it in the UK. In the UK, it's a little bit more intense. So I think that the dance floors, the way like US House was constructed and the BPM, it was just a little bit behind what we were. And as soon as these DJs kind of gave it a bit of speed or juice, that was it. It became more dance floor. It became more like dance.
Well, it became your thing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Now, Stan, a London thing. You know, it's like boom, it's yours. So on the road to being in the original times, what was like your first gig like setting up to do this actual type of night where you're going to now for you, you're going to step up and be the MC at a club in London and take the show on?
Yeah, well, the thing is, at that time, there was a garage scene, yeah? There was like an underground garage scene, but it was like for older people who were probably like in their 40s, they like dressed up smart, they had a bit of money and they'd go out. There was a scene kind of there, but they didn't play music that we play. So the thing is, there was no MCs at the time. There was no MCs who were playing a house and garage. So I got a break. Someone heard me, and because of my my sound, you know, at the time, I don't think that anybody kind of sounded like me. So the thing is, it was kind of like a fire. It was kind of like a fire setting off and catching fire. And it was like, I was kind of getting bookings here. And one booking was leading to another one. And I think Alex P took me away to Switzerland to work at one of his events a couple of times, and like I came back and we were partying as well, because like what I need to get across is the partying aspects of things was like the most important thing, because all of us we all became artists in it, but we were all kind of ravers and like party people, and it was the parties that were the nucleus of the whole scene. It wasn't like just about, you know, it was not about creating a scene. It was just about going out on a weekend and having a good time. Everything else happened organically, so to speak.
So some people, it was never about getting rich.
Nah, it wasn't about right? that.
None of that. Not about getting rich or any of that kind of champagne mentality or table service. Is all about sweat, dancing.
That's party it. To you party. Got it. You got it, bruv. It was all about partying, because that was like the best time of your life. Just imagine, like being, not imagine, but you like, you know, Lenny, yeah, being in an environment where like there's hundreds of people, like beautiful people that you know or like you don't know, but everybody loves the same thing. They all love the music. They're all out. Everybody's happy. They all want to share with each other. They all want to rave, and it's just like a beautiful thing. So we created this like mini scene from friends, and a lot of the friends were artists, and like they did their things, other people started doing the same thing. It became a massive thing, and then like other people came in and they brought their talent into the scene. It changed the music down the road, but for a time it was the most beautiful thing. Like I'm happy to have been a part of like the acid house kind of movement, going out to their events. And then I got the chance to do it with UK Garage, like from the start to the until now. And like I've seen like some of the most like beautiful things happening to people that I know. So it was just it's just great to have been on that journey. Great to have been on that journey.
Yeah. Oh, sure. And you know, you're changing people's lives through this music thing. It's not just a matter of doing it, but you're actually, it's a lifestyle. Everything that goes through with it. Like you said, it's party to party, strength to strength, friendships, relationships, business associates. You created a whole microcosm.
Yeah, it's crazy.
From a scene that happened from America coming over.
Yeah.
To all of a sudden, Londoners get together and create superstars that come from it. UKG.
It's crazy.
Carl Tuffin on the Ground. Spoonie. Mm-hmm. Norris the Boss. You.
Crazy, mate. So solid.
So solid.
Kai.
Fat Jam Lamont. Grant Nelson.
Tough Jam. Easy. EZ, Kelly, LaRock, Click, Masters of Ceremony, like Sweet Female Attitude, the list goes on. Monster Boy, Richard Dan, like just stars, mate. So yeah, it was great. And
here we go. Here we go. Because I want to keep you on, I want to keep you on the timeline. Here we go.
Okay, my brother.
So underground goes overground. You know what that means. Right. Yeah. So how do we get out of London? What's the first thing that happens that this thing now is not just a London thing anymore? You guys getting called to go across the water to Europe. Because Europe takes it on too.
Yeah, it's crazy, bro. Like, the thing is, for me, being an MC on like a burgeoning scene, as I said, there were no MCs on our scene. So like some DJs didn't even want an MC, but like we just became a part of it, or I became a part of it first. And then as a result of that, each having an MC just became a part of it, which is great. And so we went from doing gigs in London to doing gigs up and down the country to doing gigs abroad, like Holland, Spain, Greece, all over the place. We had our kind of our holiday island, which was Ayanapa, that we used to spend probably how many weeks in a year? 52 weeks in a year. We probably spent half a year in Ayanapa. So like, I mean, in season and out of season. Like it was just crazy. We'd go to like the we'd go to the hill for each other, and basically to see all your friends having this type of success was just like uplifting.
But here's
it was just uplifting.
Why did Ayanapa become such a magnet for everyone to go to next to London? This is the question.
Okay, I would.
Because every time you heard, I'm going to Ayanapa.
Nick Power had a lot to do with it, because like he had a club there, and I think that he was talking to some of my fellow MCs. I think he was talking to either Kai or Esp or Silk or something, and like a lot of footballers used to go to Napa. It was like a holiday for them. And then like one of our members, I think DJS, went there, and like he had a word with one of the biggest families in Ayanapa, and they owned a lot of clubs. And you know, he started the first night at Pasha. What's the club called? He did the first night in Napa, and I think he booked me and Spoonie. And the second night, I think he booked me and EZ. It was either the first night he booked me and EZ, or the second night he booked me and EZ. He had PSG there as well, I think. And and like it was just sold out. There were people like walking from the square to the club. It was just like a great thing. So a lot of other promoters, every other promoter from UK Garage went out there. Every promoter went out there, sorted out the night. Their crowd followed them, or the Garage crowd followed them. This was kind of later though, in the 90s.
Yeah, but you know, it's an important part to the history of everything.
Oh, definitely.
You know, pieces. I'm trying to piece everything piece by piece. I know it's hard to stay exactly 91, 92, 93.
Definitely,
but,
yeah. So,
but at least clumps of time we could talk about. Ayanapa. People were telling me, yo, man, you going to Ayanapa? I'm like, no, I play house music. And I don't play. No, you know what I mean? I don't play.
Ibiza, bro.
Yeah.
Ibiza for house.
I was going to play Ibiza. You were going to play Ayanapa. Correct.
That's it. But I did. But the thing is, yeah, in the early days, I did go to Ibiza. Like, I went to Ibiza. Like, Alex P was playing there. Dominic was playing his solo. So I'd go to Space, bring my luggage there, and just like bring it in and put it behind a DJ box and just party with them guys. for like dates.
Back in those days, Andy Swallow and that East firm controlled a lot of your clubs in London too.
Yeah, London yeah. Firms. That's it out.
Part. That's an important part of the story. You got to tell us that part too.
Very. Okay. Well, look, Andy, yeah. Andy was part of, you know, like, it's no secret, like, everyone knows. He was part of the inner city firm, which is called the ICF. And, you know, like, and Andy, even though this, like, group of guys were mainly about football and, you know, like, fighting and that stuff, Andy had a brain. So, like he was always a businessman from back then, and he was always in his music. So like he was putting on raves. He had like a radio station that he's still got now, Centerforce Radio. Me and Norris have got a show on there, and like it's quite like and back in them days it was an illegal station, but now it's a legal state station. So Andy has always had his wits about him, and he was heavily involved in the acid house rave scene. And after that, he started up a label, Labella Blank Blanco. And he was actually partners with Dominic Spreadlove at the Gas Club, that legendary night and the legendary club that kind of became one of the first big raves of UK garage. It was definitely one of the first big ones. And you know, I practically made my name there. Me and Dominic, we made our names there, like Dominic Spreadlove and Creep or whatever at the time. So yeah, Andy has always been.
And once you make your name at one place, it spreads like fire.
That's it.
Right?
You've got it, man. You've got it, brother. So that was it. From there on, it was like very, very, very busy for us. So like we were working all over the place, and you know, you could do 20 bookings a week. Easy. Like you could do six bookings in a night. So you could do 20 bookings a week. Mental, like in them days. So, and I'm talking about the mid 90s now. I'd say the early 90s were a bit more sparse, but by like the mid 90s now, 95, 96, it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy.
And you always
see
the adverts in London, Mikey, but does back to 95.
Yeah.
Back to 95. Why do they keep promoting that particular time?
Because like, if you talk about 93, yeah? In 93, the music that was there, like there was a lot of Barbara Tucker stuff. It was like Beautiful, Masters at Work. There was a lot of tunes, but like in 95, you had all them tunes and you had some more tunes that had this feeling that Four to the Floor, funky kind of that groove, that because in them days it was all about groove. It weren't about hype, like jump up. It weren't about the jump up. It was all about that groove, that kind of steady groove and raving. Like, and so what I think is that in 96 it changed. Yeah, because I would say that like up until 95 it was pure. It was more like, it was very US house influenced. Yeah, it was beautiful. In 96 it kind of changed, like the music was two-step was developing now. Yeah, two-step was developing because obviously the boys from Jungle and Drum and Bass had come over now, so like their influence was in it. So a lot of people prefer the older stuff to the two-step, and some people prefer the two-step to the older stuff. What I would say is that the people who were kind of there, like right at the beginning of the UK garage birth, like say when it was kind of US housey, but we were still doing our own thing. Yeah, those people who were about then, they will always love that era the best, because it was fresh, it was pure, it was before like a lot of people that kind of come over to our scene, and like it was kind of like a little club that not everybody knew about, if you know what I'm saying. So a lot of people love that.
Can you also define the difference between the two-step sound to the UK garage sound?
Okay.
It's really easy, street easy. Like, it's okay. Like this.
Look, yeah. The two-step sound, yeah, is like a chum, 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 chum. It's kind of like a, it's not like a housey beat. Like Four to the Floor is more house, yeah? Two-step is the garage, as I would say. And to me, that's kind of, it's got like a drum and bassy element in it. So they're the differences.
That was a good way of putting it, because when two-step came, UKG kind of took a step back for a quick second. You know, it was like, it was the new fad.
No, bro. Like two-step is UKG. That is what UKG is. But we had, what I'm saying is that the UK garage scene, the actual scene, we used to call it something called the Sunday scene, right? The Sunday scene was going from 1991 onwards, yeah? And like we were playing a lot of US house, and we were playing some homemade tracks too, right? But it was a scene that all of these people that we're that we're on about were kind of there. Well, all the OGs were there on this Sunday scene. The music was like Nice and Ripe, Strictly Rhythm, as I said. There was Ice Cream Records, there was Nervous Records, there was 500 Records, there were loads of different labels that were making this like underground UK garage, but it wasn't two-step yet. Two-step was kind of like speed garage, I suppose. Yeah, that's what you called it. Like you guys would know it's a speed garage, but all of it is UKG. It's all UKG.
But the beats changed because you heard a different type of beat. It wasn't a straight. It was a little bit like tripping, like.
Yeah, of course, Bob. That's the drum and bass element.
That's right, and the drum and bass element is James Brown.
Yeah.
So you got James Brown influence now coming into house music, and this is what you get, a two-step sound.
Crazy.
With heavy bass with what you call raga bass, right? The raga bass.
Raga, yeah. Definitely raga is in there.
Now,
raga is definitely in there, yeah.
You leaving the underground, and you get a chance to go on one of the most internationally accepted programs for a record to be on, called Top of the Pops at the time. Which was officially the place to have a pop record. For example, like the Beatles or any major artist, Elton John to Britney Spears, whatever. Here comes MC Creed with his top hat and getting ready to lay out the rhythmical rhyme that he does, but
okay,
you got to get us from the underground to that point.
Okay. So the thing is, like I'm doing the circuit for years. Yeah, I'm doing the circuit. My name has grown. Like I'm working everywhere. At the time, I was kind of I was probably the top MC. I was booked the most, and like, I was probably the top MC, and like also I was the first MC. So so because of that, I've always been kind of treated well by people. Anyway, DJ Pied Piper, a good friend of mine, he had a brother, and his brother was in a rap group called Hijack, and his name was Comanche Sly. in Hijack, which was like a UK hip hop group. And Piper, as a younger guy, was touring with them. They were signed by Ice-T, and like they did two world tours with Ice-T, Leaders of the New School or something like that, I'm not sure. But basically he came to the Channel Club, and he met us at the Channel Club, and he said, look guys, I want to make a track with you, because like he was already an artist. I wasn't really an artist. I think I did one record in 1993 with Dominic, One Nation it was called, and that was probably the only tune that I'd done up until then, proper tune that went out. So I've said yes. Him and Piper were the two producers. They also dragged in MC PSG. This was in 1997, this must have been nearly 1998. So they built this track, and it was kind of like a remix of like Good Rhymes, good Times. It was like a remix of Good Times, Chic. And but it had a little bit of a rap song.
That's exactly what it was. No, that's all right. It's because when you hear the record, you do hear the reminiscence of Chic Good Times in it.
Definitely, bruv. And I've just had a mind block then. I can't remember the other tune in it. But listen, it doesn't matter, because like they sent us the tune, and like all of us wrote some lyrics for it, and we just went to the studio, recorded it, and just like forgot about it really. And then like about a month after, we're at Twice as Nice, and then Piper and his brother have turned up, and they're in the car park, and they played us this song. And this song was like, it was like brainwashing, you know, like where you kind of hear a song and like you just got to hear it again and again and again. It was like one of them instantly. So we knew immediately that, like, you know, at the time, that it was going to be a big track. And that was it. Like that just started getting played in the clubs, and it was like Twice as Nice. They played it in Twice as Nice, and I was emceeing, and like when they played that tune, it got about all of us, we did a PA, it got about seven rewinds, bruv. Like the people would not let us just play the tune. It was like seven rewinds, which was mad.
Can I break in and give you the other record that it was? That
Rapper's Delight. It was Rapper's Delight, bro.
That, and also, I think if I remember hearing it, I thought I heard Luther Vandross, Never Too Much in there.
No. It was Rapper's Delight. Definitely. Yeah, I just, you know, my brain just turned on again.
That's
bro.
All right.
Don't worry.
You got it. When you said you got seven rewinds to something, I've understood what that means. What exactly does that mean? You got seven rewinds.
That means that the crowd are calling for a rewind. The crowd's going, pull it up, rewind it. Like the crowd was going mad. So they did that seven times, right? In Twice as Nice. It was mad. So at the end of the day, we knew that we had a hit. We put it out. We sold a lot of records on White Label, and then basically, I hate saying basically. It's really bad saying that. And then,
all right, basically.
And then Pete Tong, London Records, took the record. Yeah, he got sent the record. He took it to New York, and he was playing at a party, at a Puff Daddy party, right? And like when he played it, Puff Daddy went mad, like, man, that tune, because that's the type of thing he does. He used to get them old tunes and turn them into something new, innit? That's what he used to do, right? Like he'd get the old soul tunes and, you know, make like rap, kind of rap from them. So us doing this was a similar thing to what he does. So, you know, it, he loved it, and like he made a big thing of it, and then Pete Tong come back and signed us straight away. As soon as that happened, he come and signed us to London Records, and then that was it. From there, yeah.
What do you mean that's it? Your life changes right then and there. Your life changes from the underground to the commercial overground.
You see, from
street to the Eiffel Tower, you know, literally, right?
Yeah, right, bro. Definitely, man. So, like, you know, like at that time, you know, we ended up doing a tour, I think. We've done a tour with Another Level and a group called Fierce. We just did like a UK tour. At the same time, me, Norris, and Jason Kay were putting on the Garage Awards. So, like, we did an awards in 2000. This record came out in 98. We did Top of the Pops, I think, in 99. Yeah, 99. It's probably January of 99. So it was kind of just after that that me and Norris and Jason started planning the Garage Awards, because, you know, the scene had burned up so much. We needed an award ceremony. So there, we did that. We did an awards at Brixton Academy.
To every scene that goes overground, were you guys worried now that this thing was getting out of control, and that
definitely
with a balloon, it you know,
definitely, definitely, because the thing is, as I said, the music had gotten more bouncy, which led to its popularity to more people. It was more bouncy and more, you know, appealing to youngsters as well. So at the end of the day, we got a lot of youngsters. Listen, like, you cannot complain, because this is kind of how life is, and this is how music is. Nothing stays the same. Everything changes. But the thing is, we did notice a different type of crowd that were coming into our clubs. And you know, it was the same type of crowd who led to the downfall of the jungle scene. And then the jungle scene had to, you know, rebuild, and it became like, you know, the drum and bass scene, drum and bass jungle and jump up.
And
whatever.
That's the fear every time when you have something pure and beautiful, that you got this thing called the bridge and tunnel crowd that comes in. They're not from the scene. They just
want it
now. And you're like,
you've got it, bro.
Get these people in here.
You got it, bro. And that's what happens, man. And the thing is, that always ends up bad. It always ends up bad. But it's kind of, it's just the way things are. If you're popular, then at the end of the day, you have to open yourself up to everybody. Yeah, like, and that music became very pop popular. And in order to sustain itself, it had to let in everyone.
Tell me, was there a demise of this after? Was there, like, you know, well, imploding effect? And
no, what it was, bro, in about, I think it was 2003. It could have been because, like, we were going to do our third Garage Awards. We did one in 2000. We did one in 2002. We were going to do another one, and like, we didn't do it because of this. So what happened? There was like a lot of trouble in the clubs, and, you know, like, people were getting killed and stuff. Yeah, that's basically how bad it was. And I just remember somebody getting killed, either inside or outside Turnmills, I think. And after that, they banned Garage from every club in the UK.
Let me. I think I remember this story. Let me see if I have it correct. Was it the security guys that beat this kid to death in Turnmills?
No.
Or was he shot? Or somebody was shot?
This was a shooting, bro. This is a
shooting. And that's not something that was normal in London clubs, to have shooters like this.
No, look. The thing is, right, London, yeah, right, is as gully as anywhere. It's got like an undercurrent that's dark and gully, 100%. But the thing is, back in the day, if there was a shooting in a club, that club would be over, like nobody would go there again. But it went from that to, if there's a shooting in a club, people go there again the next week. And then once that happens, if there's a shooting, it kind of becomes like, not like, I've been in two clubs where people have been killed. Two clubs. Once we're at the back having a chat, I've heard bang. Next thing I've gone out, there's a guy shot up upstairs. Another club, someone got shot on the dance floor. But what I'm saying is that the people who did these things were not part of our scene. They were, as you said, these other people that come in when things get popular. But in them banning garage, because garage was like the place that anyone, it was kind of like a window that people would use to show their wares. So if you had talent in the UK, because garage was so big at the time, you'd come to garage because that was like, you know, the spotlight. And these people that were doing these things were not of our scene or whatever. And as soon as garage got banned, they disappeared, because then like it wasn't the top thing anymore. Other scenes came in and kind of, you know, replaced it. A lot of them sounded a lot like garage, but the thing is they called them something else, and they were able to, you know, build and continue that. And in the meantime, garage was there just licking its wounds, trying to like build back. And it took us until about 2011 to really build back properly. That's a long time, bro.
Yeah, you had to kind of, they say, go into the mattresses, go home, go underground, take it real deep, right?
That's it, mate. Don't get me wrong, we were trying to put on little raves and stuff and all that. And, you know, there were some promoters that really kept us going. Garage Nation is one of them. Back to 95 is another one of them. You know, there are other raves like your Exposures, your Twice as Nice, and your Sun City. All of these guys were all trying to continue the thing, but the thing is the crowd just wasn't there anymore, because people, you know, some years had passed and people had moved on to other things. But then
wait a minute,
so yeah, like now we're healthy again, but you know, and we have been for a good 13 years now.
Let me show how healthy you are. Look, you see, they have these,
that's these, it, Stinky Piper, Oxide and Neutrino. Gosh, she's a bit. Oh, what? Is that Scott Garcia? Is that English music? Mate, I kind of. Wow. Yeah.
A lot of people. A lot of good people.
Yes, mate. Yes, mate. That is Scotty. Yeah. Yeah. So that's it, bro.
People still
good times, bro.
Oh, yeah. Before I let you go, because you covered a lot of history, where do you see this going to the future for you?
Where do I see it going for the future? Well, the thing is, yeah, there are a lot of producers making new UKG right now. They're making new music. Me and Norris, we play a lot of this stuff on our show on Centerforce 883, which is on DAB. And we play, and we do every other Tuesday. Our next show is is kind of Tuesday week. So Norris, he plays a lot of tunes from up and coming new producers, and like there's a scene that's going on right now in the UK that is very young and it's very fresh, as well as the old school scene as well. Yeah, there's like different types of garage going on. There are festivals kicking off. There's a lot of promotions going. And, you know, like to me, all I see is that every generation gets older garage. In the end, our crowd keeps on growing. Like last week I was working at a place and there were kids in there who were like 17 and 18. They were 17 and 18 and they knew all the words to all the tunes. So that's what I'm saying, mate. They know garage. I just see it growing and growing and growing from here, my brother.
So garage is here to stay. It's cemented itself as
it'll never die. It'll never die. Too many people love it.
Yeah, it's real music. It's music.
That's it, bro.
It's music. My man, we wish you the best, Mr. MC Creed. What a great story. And again, you know, only no one could tell it better than yourself.
Good to see you, my brother. And thank you very much for being so, like, graceful and courteous.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, and follow them on Center Force Radio. Norris the Boss Windross. He's an OG godfather right there. And MC Creed. My man, take care of yourselves. Everyone, thank you for tuning in to True House Stories. Catch us each with a new episode. Of course, right here, you got the UKG story. Have a good one, everyone. Take care.